podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
They could break here, Chelsea. This could be the moment. Frank Lampard for Chelsea. It's Carvalho to his right. Lampard for the title. Lampard! It's 2-0! It's Chelsea's championship! And 50 years of waiting have come to an end!
Lampard comes out to Essien!
Oh my goodness.
Stretch it, counter-attack. Here's Didier Drogba. And now get down the middle. Drogba goes! Chelsea 2, Arsenal
0,
and Didier Drogba
has...
Drogba in the centre!
McCoy just came from the back.
Well, as possibly bleak as this. Drogba!
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. We were away for a week. We are due a holiday. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, the way that they're bringing players out to do this UEFA Nations League, that's how I felt out. That's how I felt when there was another pod, and I was thinking, listen, we need a little bit of a rest. So, we are back this week. We are doing a series, and essentially, I'm here with Babs. What are you saying, Babs?
Yeah, I'm not too bad.
Good. Yourself? Yeah, I'm good. So, I don't know if you managed to listen to the one we did with Joe.
Of course.
Yes. So, you know what's coming.
Of course.
Yeah. So essentially, we're not just going to get into what you think the best 11 that we can put together for next season is. We're also going to get into your thoughts on your philosophy, etc., etc. Because the way that I see it, and this is what pisses me off about like football fandom today, is like people think there's only one way to kind of win, and it was like, no, we just have to do this. This is the only way to win. But when it comes down to it, I think that there's many different teams that we can put together that can win the league. And usually, do you know what you see? Usually on Twitter anyway, when you put a team up, people think it's funny to respond saying, oh, they're going to finish sixth or finish eighth or whatever. And everybody wants to shit on everybody's team. So I'm playing the role of the person that's going to shit on your team, but I'm not going to do it and just be like dismissive. I'm just going to give you a chance to explain.
You know what? I've got a change. I'm going to send it to you.
Oh, so you're making a lot of change. You're under pressure already.
I just thought, yeah, you know, this team is a bit too realistic. You know, I got at least, you know, have a bit of fun.
Yeah, so we want realism. It's got to be realistic, but not too realistic. Because the thing is, the listeners are going to be listening to this. They're going to be judging you. Because people take this seriously. You know? People with football opinions, they judge you. And like, you don't know shit. So they're going to be judging you. So make all the changes you need to now. But before we get into the actual team that you're suggesting, then we're just going to talk about the main 11 for you. A main 11, because looking at last season, I know Tuchel was saying that, oh, against Man United, we thought Ziyech should play because he can do crossing, et cetera, et cetera. But really and truly, I like when a team is able to be a team of all seasons. So it's not necessarily, oh, against this team, we need Werner because they're in behind, but against this team, Werner shouldn't play because they sit back. Really and truly, I think the winning teams are the teams where you can have a main 11 that can pass a lot of tests against different oppositions. So I'm hoping that's the type of 11 you're going to put to me. I put Joe under duress. Joe made the change during the pod last time around Mount, which was funny. But Babs, you ready, yeah?
I'm ready.
Okay, send it so I've got it.
Cool. I've sent it.
Cool. So before we get into the actual people in it, what about the current team just really irks you? Like, really isn't Babs-style football?
It's too much, man. I could be here all day, really and truly. But I'll start from the top. The attackers, you know, I just don't think there's enough creativity. This is an issue we spoke about last season. You know, we remember the pods at the end of... No, but not this last season, but the season before that. You remember the pods where I was complaining that, look, we don't have enough creativity. That's the issue, not the striker. And it seemed to have reared its ugly head. And I think that's one of the main things for me. The second thing is I don't think we have enough dynamism out wide. So we don't really have any players that can like offer like different alternatives to playing in that position. Like you have like a Cho who can play there. He can play like the either side, or he can play on the inside. And you have Mount, who's trying his best to do that. But other than that, you know what you're going to get from Ziyech, you know, just to cross the cut in, cross it in. And then Pulisic, she just wants to get in behind. And neither of them are particularly good enough at that for it to be like acceptable as wingers. So I don't really like that. The midfield, I've never really liked the midfield. I won't lie. I haven't really liked it for a while. I don't think it's sturdy enough. I feel like we lack physicality at times. And not just that, but these guys are breaking apart. Like I feel like Kante should have had his understudy 2 seasons ago, let alone last season.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Kovacic is a good player. He's getting a lot better now, which is good to see. And Jorginho, I think he's all right. I think he's underrated, even though I don't really think he's as good as a lot of people think. But I'm ready to move on from him. And then the defense, you know, as much as I love Thiago Silva, I was saying it to these guys, like, look, man, this guy, last he wasn't as good as everybody thought last season, man. He had a lot of shaky moments. And I don't know, if that was a youth player that was doing some of the stuff he was doing, people would have been doing their agendas already. So I know he's a nice guy and we all love him, but
what?
He's another player that's, I don't know, I'm not really feeling it, man, at the moment.
This is your world, man. So I'm going to let you hang. Do you know what they said? Give you enough rope. So keep on talking. Mm-hmm. You don't like Thiago.
And what else? Mendy, that's another one. Mendy has been shocking for like the second half of the season. And he's been looking a bit funny under the lights. Like, he's done well for us. So I've got a lot of time for him. I'm going to give him a bit of time to still, you know, regain his shame. But the second half of the season, man, he was looking funny, man.
So he's built up the credit, but he needs to fix up before he maxes out. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly, man. Because this is Chelsea. Man. I don't have time to be doing nice guy, man. Look, I want to win again. I'm tired of all this. Third, fourth.
Mendy needs to fix his credit score. Okay, so I've taken a couple of notes. One point. So you said the issue in attack is creativity, not the striker. Yeah.
Well, the striker too, but creativity is the thing that I've been talking about for so long that okay. I just thought that was the first thing I was going to point out.
Okay, cool. All right. So the striker is an issue, but you think the creativity is more of an issue.
Precisely.
All right, cool. And you haven't talked about formation. Formation issue or not?
I don't really care about the formation. It's not really my favorite, but
mm-hmm.
I'd rather... I don't know if we were to move away from it, I wouldn't be angry. If we were to move away from it, I wouldn't be like over the moon, like, oh, this is such a tremendous thing. Yay. Okay. Like, I wouldn't really care either way, but...
You're coping with it. You're okay with it.
I'm more or less okay with it, but I'm just not okay with the way... Actually, no, I'm not okay with the way Tuchel uses it. I'd say that.
I feel you. What? Give me and the audience a little bit more. What is wrong with the way Tuchel's using it?
So like he claims it to be a whole thing of like, you know, you defend with five and attack with five, but sometimes it doesn't feel like that, you know. And I feel that's obviously like when you have Alonso there getting up and down, it's not exactly easy for him. So
mm-hmm.
even though you're defending with five, it's kind of full until he can get up there. And if he is up there, it's a hit and miss. Like if it's not a shooting position, he's useless.
But, his
crossing isn't the best. So
Babs, Alonso mm-hmm. doesn't come back, you know.
I know that's Alonso my point.
Stays up there, but that's why we are. But Alonso, for me, he's more of an attacker than a defender. So when he says attack with five and defend with five, Alonso is not part of the defenders. The wing backs aren't part of the defenders. The five and attack are the wing backs, the twin tens, and the striker. The defensive five is the three at the back and the two.
Midfielders.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I just had to get my Alonso slander in there. Man.
Okay.
I want that guy gone, man. And Tuchel, if you try and convince him and Aspi, you're on the chopping block too, man.
Well,
I'm tired, man. I can't do another season of Alonso, man.
All right.
I can't
do it. So Tuchel, and for all intents and purposes, when he came in, he said one of the reasons he wanted to change back to a back three is because he wanted Aspi, the captain, on the pitch.
To be on the pitch, yeah.
And when he talks about Aspi, he's talking about his attitude and the fact that he always gives. And to be fair, Aspi's been loved by most of the managers because of the same reasons. When we know when Tuchel talked about Lukaku, and I was listening to the interview.
Yeah, I mean, shit, man, nothing about ability. He's all about attitude and all that
stuff.
He was
all
man.
Talking about all of those other kind of things. And so it does seem like Tuchel leads with the non-on-the-pitch stuff, which is scary. But if you was Tuchel's right-hand man in terms of this kind of, if you was his sporting director, then you would have influence in how we shape the team for the future. And so where do you think you want to start? Because I think we started an attack with Joe, but we can go from attack to defence, or we can go from defence to
attack. I'd start from left back.
Okay. Why? Because you've got a random name that you want to take credit for.
No, I just think left back because, you know, a lot of people are thinking that someone's ready to just come back in from ACL, and I want to start from defence, and we already know who's going to be right back, so
okay, all right.
Why make it boring?
So we can start with, you said left back, which kind of gave away where you're going. So talk to me about what you do at left back.
Mm-hmm. I'd bring in Adrien Truffert.
So
Adrien Truffert.
Yeah. Is it Truffert? Truffert? Is he French?
Mm-mm, he's not French. He's not French.
Okay. Where's he from?
He's Belgian.
Belgian, that's the one. So maybe Francophone, because I heard about this guy at the beginning of the season.
He's a white don.
No.
Oh, okay, got you.
Francophone, it doesn't mean black.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. I've got to mix up the other two.
most of the Francophone players are black, but it just means French speaking. But so to be fair, one of the people that is part of Chessy in the background, he told me about this player really early in the season. I had a look. He's done well. Apparently, he's had a good season too. So talk to me about, we are just talking about the main 11. We're not even going to concentrate on the backup. Now we know that Chilwell is around, so, and you've already kind of referenced that, you know, obviously he'll be competing, so that's fine. But what would Adrien Truffert bring to our team?
For me, it's mainly just that wide threat. So, you know, someone that can actually attack the penalty area, similar to what we've got from Alonso, as well as passing the ball in there, you know, offering progressive carries. He's quite creative as well. Mm-hmm. He's been a big part of why Rennes have done so well, you know, last season. And he was actually, funny enough, I wasn't actually watching Rennes to even find out about him. It was mainly just to find out about Sulemana, and watching him play on that left back position. It was really, really impressive. Mm-hmm. He offers really good crosses. He's aggressive. You know, he reads the ball. He reads the game well. So he's actually quite good in terms of like intercepting the ball.
Yeah.
And he's also like a very athletic player. So having that kind of guy there, left back, you know, to offer a number whilst Chilwell gets better will be good. And not just that, but you're also raising the floor from what you had there previously with Marcus Alonso. So having that kind of guy there would also be good. And just keeping that, if we ask those to play for it, about having that threat of being able to get into the penalty area, you know, I feel like that would be still useful.
It's so funny. It reminds me of when I was watching Dortmund, because everyone was talking about Sancho, including Babs, by the way. And so I went to verify, to see, because, you know, like sometimes people act like they watch, but they don't really watch. And that's where I came across Hakimi. Everyone was saying Sancho this, Sancho that. And I was like, yeah, no, he's not really doing the work getting up and down the wing, like for Dortmund. And Hakimi was just amazing. That's when I came across Hakimi. And that seems like the same thing for you with Adrien Truffert. So we're talking about game, like, really intrigued. This is a team designed. Do you know, like when we look at the Chelsea team that won the league under Mourinho, most people could name the 11. Most people could name the main 11 that won the league under Conte. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like, we don't have to, I know there was other people in it, but most positions you could say, okay, this was the guy that played mostly left wing back, right wing back, the three in defence, Cahill, Luiz, Aspie, Moses, Alonso, Kante, Matic, and then it was Costa, Hazard, and then one of Willian and Pedro. Do you know what I'm saying? So, like, usually for title-winning teams, you can just name the 11, right?
Yeah, and there's identity there.
Yeah, so Truffert, do you think he'll be a game-changer for us?
I definitely think so. I feel like after watching Alonso for so long, you know, he's not... I feel like that'll be like an instant upgrade. And not just that, but he's a young player as well, so he's just going to keep getting better and better.
Fair enough. Okay. So when I'm looking at the rest of your defence, I'll give the game away and say you have Mendy in goal.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Reece James, as you said, no-brainer, right back. And then two in defence, you got Thiago Silva, who he was actually saying had a shaky season last season.
Yep.
I don't agree. I think...
I didn't say the whole season. I'm talking about that towards the end of the season. I think it was very shaky.
Okay. But... listen, towards the end of the season, that's still like a small part of the season compared to, but in general, but that makes sense because I think he had a great season. I think he was one of our best players. Okay, so Thiago Silva, 38.
Mm-hmm.
He'd be fair. How is he now? 37?
Yeah.
So 37
or he's 38.
Those who know will know. But so you're thinking, let's go again with Thiago Silva as a stall in our defense.
You know, just to ease in, you know, the other potential centre backs. I think bringing him in there, you know, having that experience at the back will probably still be useful. Okay. And plus, you know, we still got Trev, we still got Cole, we still got another centre back hopefully coming in. You know, so I think it'll be all right.
Babs, you need to do one of these against me where you're hosting and you're putting me under duress for my team. But I think this is good because we're explaining our opinion and all of that type of stuff, and then we can look back at it next season and it's not vague. We've all said, do you know what I'm saying? Like I said from the beginning, I'm not really in the Lukaku camp. I wasn't in the Ziyech camp. I wasn't in the Werner camp. But to get it documented and say, okay, you didn't want these players, but who did you want instead? Because it's easy to say, I don't want Lukaku. But then maybe, maybe you wanted some dead player instead, you know what I'm saying? Like David. To be fair, I don't even know if that David guy is bad, but I remember a lot of people was talking about him last season. They're not talking about him this season. Okay, so Thiago Silva is the man in defence. Then you've got a new name as a partner for Thiago Silva. And who have you got?
Fofana.
Yeah,
Fofana. Wesley Fofana.
Listen. Wesley Fofana is one of my finds. I was telling people about this guy ages ago. And I remember at the time, obviously, I mentioned it in Chelsea chat. And they were saying, we got too many defenders already. We got Gerhi. We got Tomori. And I was telling you, this kid is special. I was like, I'm telling you. And it was, remember that? Who's that lanky guy that we got from Barcelona that everybody just like, did we get him from Barcelona? The Dutch kid?
Yeah, I know you're talking about that guy. I was telling guys from earlier, that guy is not good, man.
People
light skin tax, man. They saw him. They saw he was Dutch. They're like, oh, Van Dijk.
This is what I'm saying. They fell for it. And it was like, no, we got him as well. I was like, I'm telling you, Fofana. And the thing is with Fofana, he's not the tallest, but the reason why I knew about Fofana is because I study stats and I just kind of let the stats speak to me. So I'm not, because a lot of the times we go and do confirmation bias. It's like, oh, we know about this player and we try to look for the stats to make them look even better or look even worse. And so that's why sometimes I just like to go into the stats like Neo in the Matrix and just see who pops out. And Fofana popped out in terms of aerial duels, just all these different things. Because basically I found a model for what is a good defender. And then I kind of plugged it in. I just wanted to see what the stats would bring me. And then Fofana came out. And what I usually do, because obviously, and I think people need to understand this, because I work in like this kind of area or adjacent to it anyway, but we are so far from being able to use statistics to pick out players. So even though like the statistics that I use kind of suggest players to me, I still have to go back and watch them to see, okay, where is it wrong? Where is it right? And so for defenders, because I've done it for attackers, but defenders and goalkeepers, different positions, you need to tweak it a little bit. And so I found a group of defenders and I just went watching them. And then I saw Fofana and I was like, this kid is amazing. Like, not just statistically, but when you watch him. And I think we've all seen it now, how good he is. But he's at Leicester. Apparently, he's just signed a new contract. This is supposed to be a feasible 11 too. So do you feel like Fofana could be done this season?
I don't see why not. I saw there was a couple of reports that were saying, 80 million euros?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what, 65 million pounds? Mm-hmm. Never going to pay, 55, 60 for Koundé allegedly. I'd rather pay that.
Do you call him?
Premium.
Huh? Say again. What's his name?
Koundé.
Okay, cool.
what do you think I said?
No, it's fine. this is a family-friendly pod. So Fofana, what is the most that you'll pay for him? Where it's like, all right, cool, I'm out. I rate the player, but now you're getting crazy.
I'd say like 70, 80 million pounds.
80 million.
I'd pay up for that for him. Because I just feel like the talent that you get is worth that money.
Well, so let me ask you about, because I know that you watched the French League, and I know you're not trying, you watch the like French League. So you've seen Saliba, and I know that you're a fan.
Yeah.
And there has been a conversation for a couple of years now, since basically I brought Fofana up, about Fofana versus Saliba. Who would you choose if you could get one of them
for the same price?
Same price.
Fofana easily.
Okay.
Run easily. I really like Saliba. I think he's like a very good player on the ball. Mm-hmm. But what I like from centre back, I just like the guys that are aggressive, front footed, and that's like Fofana, like hand on heart. And I feel like with Saliba, as good as he is, I still need to see him in the Prem.
Yeah,
you know. But obviously, he's really as impressed for Marseille. You know, they do play a high line. He's played in the four at the back. He's played in the three at the back, and he's looked comfortable either way. And if we were to get him, I would be happy with that as well. Like, it's not even it's not at all a slight of him. I just think Fofana at the moment is better.
I think Fofana's younger than Saliba as well. And I know, I know people get comfortable with that. Okay, Fofana's done it in the Premier League. We don't have Saliba. But I don't forget, when I was checking out Fofana, I was seeing Saliba as well. I sent Etienne. So, and for me, Saliba has always looked a bit like, I haven't been that impressed by him. And so, and this is not just the fact that Fofana's done it in the Premier League. This is Fofana in France. Immediately I saw him, I was thinking, this kid is the truth. With Saliba, I know that there's been some good tackles and recovery, and people like the Dutch kid, I think people like the stature.
I don't even think he's even the best French young centre-back I've seen in that league.
Yeah.
For me, if you want to go and get someone, I'd go and get Badiashile from Monaco. I think he's ridiculous.
Is he like 17 though? Is he like really young?
No. I think you're thinking of the kid at PSG. That's who you're thinking of. But Badiashile is 21.
Okay.
And his first season at Monaco as a starter. Okay. He's a player that he's just ridiculous on the ball. I think he's probably as good, if not better, than Fofana on the ball.
Perfect.
He's really good aerially. He reads the game well. He plays the back four. So, not to say that there's a doubt any other player playing the back three, but he plays the back four already. And I think he's just an amazing player. That if you want to be like, 25, 30 million for a centre back, you'd be winning if you got him. Okay. Absolutely winning.
All right. So, this is the team that Babs is selling to Tuchel, the team that is going to win us the league over a Liverpool team managed by Klopp and a City team managed by Pep. And also a Spurs team that is aggressively, like, Conte's not playing about. Let's be honest. I know that a couple of Chelsea fans are scared now.
I was telling a certain man that, look, man, Conte is not—he's not here to play around, man.
At all, he's going for the jugular. He's going.
That's the one thing that you could always respect about Conte. That no matter what, he just wants to win.
I love the fact that Conte isn't here to be just a number, just to play a part.
Like, if you ask Conte what his aim is, you'll definitely tell you to win the league. You wouldn't mess around.
Did you see how sick he was when they were losing? He was sick. He couldn't take it. And
this guy was throwing the Prem.
I'm telling you, and don't forget, when we was getting slapped by Arsenal, Liverpool, before the transfer window closed, I know that he got them to make some signings, because I can tell he can't stand losing. Like, when Inter said, we ain't got the money to be buying these players, he's like, okay, I'm gone. Because he just got no appetite to just compete, to not win. That's what I'm saying. So he protects that, which is good. But that kind of shows the kind of competitors that we're going up against. So Spurs, don't forget, since he came in, I think they may have done better than us since Conte came in.
I used to always send those tables to you guys in the group chat. They're creeping up, man.
So we, like, again, we're gonna all start at the same time next season. So they're one to watch. So we're building a team. We've got Tuchel, who's a good manager, but we just need to give them the team to compete with these guys. Okay, so 4-3-3 you've gone, and you've gone with. He's gone with an anchor man. Have you gone with a DLP? Have you gone with a Regista?
I wouldn't call Tonali a Regista. Yeah. I wouldn't actually call.
Why wouldn't you call him a Regista? So it's Tonali we're talking about. But go.
Mm-hmm. I think he's more of a. I wouldn't say like a ball winning midfielder, but he kind of isn't that more. But even the way that he plays for Milan, he doesn't really sit. At the moment, like, sometimes he will sit and other times he will go forward and try and win the ball and try and power forward in Milan. But the only reason I want him, I just think he's an amazing player. Like, whenever I watch Milan, he's literally just the heart and soul of that midfield, him and Benacer. So
he's the heart and soul.
I really like them.
Yeah, like a Regista is supposed to be. Listen.
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
People treat it like a dirty word. That's why I wanted to say
I don't feel like a dirty
word. I know, but it's just like people want a distance and like the word Regista has become so closely coupled with Jorginho. You know what I'm saying? Like people think, oh no, a Regista is someone that can't run fast or whatever. But it's just literally what you said, the heart and soul. So yeah, if he can be that for us, then that's good. And you're right. So when he first came through, everyone was talking about Pirlo, a young Pirlo. But I don't think, people always do that. Do you know what I'm saying? Like Lukaku's the new Drogba and all this.
Yeah.
But then I think as he's played more, people have been, like from what I'm hearing, and I haven't been watching Milan as much as you guys, but people were saying that he's got a bit of that Gattuso in him too. So I get what you're saying. And Tonali, you think Italians travel well?
I don't think it's, I think that Italians not traveling well. I just don't think that the best Italians tend to travel, if that makes sense. I don't think they tend to travel. But yeah, I mean, for me, I just think Tonali's an amazing player. I think his journey's been interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, last season when he was on loan with the option to buy, he didn't exactly have the best of seasons. He was actually good, in my opinion. And they took a risk when it came to buying him. And he's proven the right in terms of spending the money. So if he was to come here, I think he'd be amazing. I really do think he'd be, like, just his physical profile as well as his technical ability, I think he'd be a really good player to have.
Okay. And as much as people hate it, and as much as people say, oh, we've tried it with Regista, and we don't win leagues with Registas. We've won leagues with Registas. I'm sorry to say it. Like, when it comes down to it, again, as much as it might be a dirty word to you, most Italian managers will play with an anchor man that is the heart and soul. Like, so they're not attacking playmakers that are supposed to be doing through balls, but they're the people that are supposed to be helping you transition up the pitch, et cetera, et cetera. Being that deeper playmaker. And Mikel was literally that for us with Ancelotti. Even Makaleli, that's what Ranieri said when he brought them in. I'm bringing him in to be my deeper playmaker. And we've had a lot of Italian managers, you know what I'm saying? Even Di Matteo brought Mikel back in from the cold. Because don't forget, AVB tried to replace him with Romeu. And was it Di Matteo? Di Matteo took over AVB, yeah. And then he brought Mikel back in from the cold. So this whole idea that Chelsea don't need to function with a Regista, like, I actually think most of the times we've done well, we've had that type of player. And to be fair, we can talk about the Conte season. We can talk about the Conte season and maybe the Mourinho season when they came back. We did have Matic, by the way, who, again, Matic, similar to most deep line playmakers, first they're attacking playmakers, then they get moved back. And Matic at first was an attacking playmaker, but he got moved back. But Matic's game, there's an argument of whether you can call him deep line playmaker, because he definitely didn't, like, he's someone that dribbled and liked to go up the field. And so, yeah, so like, I guess Tonali will kind of keep that going in us having that kind of person at the back to kind of, you know, help us transition up in this team. And then for your next midfielder, we've got two options, box to box. Who you going to reveal first?
I'll go Kovacic first.
You had an interesting relationship with Kovacic, because for a long while, you was one of those people. Like, don't forget, not just you, but Chelsea fans in general, it's an interesting relationship with Kovacic. Because I remember at first, when we got him, everyone was like, oh, he's so amazing. And I think a lot of people saw him as, like, because obviously when we got Sarri, people just said, oh, Sarri's trying to recreate his Napoli team. So they said, okay, we need the Hamzik type. And so they played themselves, which a lot of Chelsea fans do, the same way
where... Yeah, they build up ideas in their head.
Yeah, without actually knowing the player. So when Havertz came in, they was like, oh, he's going to be our KDB. Just the same way with Kovacic, was like, oh, he's going to be our Hamzik. And it's like, you probably just don't know the player. And I think that a lot of people assume, because there was, like, in a Sarri team, the left central midfielder is the attacking midfielder. But really, truly, Sarri never said that. He played Hamzik there, but Hamzik used to play anchor man too and defensive midfield. So Hamzik's always had that defensive side to his game too. And I think Sarri likes box-to-box players, people with energy and box-to-box. So, but Kovacic wasn't that player. So I think a lot of people got let down with Kovacic's lack of attacking ability. And therefore, this is just my assumption, but I know a lot of people mentioned it. That's why Kovacic went from being, oh, this is this great signing that we've got on loan from Real Madrid, to he's not good enough. And so we, a lot of people didn't want us to spend 40 million on Kovacic because they didn't think he was worth 40 million, even in the season where we were banned and the only signing we could make was Kovacic. And then he got a lot of hate under the Lampard regime because people started to call him a crab player, someone that passes side to side.
Really? I thought he got the most love under him, you know?
There was this.
He got player of the season, etc. I thought he got the most love.
Right. So like it kind of changed. So at first he got love, but then very quickly at the beginning of the season, Kovacic and Jorginho was the main two, if you remember.
Yeah.
And they went well, but then when things started to get sticky, that's when the hate started to come in. And then he built it back up. And I think Jorginho ended the season well as well. And now it's headband Jorginho. But it felt like both Jorginho and Kovacic, it's been up and down, but Jorginho's been way lower. The downs have been lower. And Kovacic, the highs has been kind of higher. But talk to me about Kovacic, because I kind of really want to understand where you're at right now, because there has been times where you're like, no, just sell, I don't rate. But he's in your
team. Yeah, he's impressed me, man. He's really impressed me. I feel like the side of his game that I've wanted to really be shown is finally come out. Like I just feel like when you're this good of like a dribbler, you're able to progress the ball that well, you've got to give me more, man. Like with the amount of talent that he had and the amount of talent that he showed at Inter as a youngster, like I just wanted to see a lot more. And he showed it early on, especially in the season, like something like his final third passing. And I feel like if he's able to like show that next season as well, I think the sky's the limit.
I remember when Tuchel first came in, obviously he took over from Lampard and we switched to a 3-4-3. I remember a lot of people saying that his passing had improved towards the end of the season when we switched to 3-4-3. And then obviously we had a whole season. Obviously he was injured throughout the season, but a lot of people said his passes come along. And for me, and this is just my take on it,
I don't think it's his passing as much. I just think it's the ingenuity going forward.
He's got a lot more assists and all that type of stuff. And for me, I remember when we switched to a 3-4-3 under Conte and Matic got a gang of assists. And everyone was like, rah, all of a sudden Matic's being a creator. And from what I saw, and this is kind of just my assumption or my take from last time, I was like, yeah, in the 3-4-3, essentially, Matic, when you're playing a 4-3-3, like you've kind of proposed, and what we saw with Kovacic a lot of time, Kovacic will dribble up the ball, and then because Eden was right next to him, there was a simple pass. Oh, okay, let me pass to Eden because I've dribbled the ball up, and now let me give the ball to the attacker. Whereas in a 3-4-3, a lot of the time, the players aren't as close to him. So I don't know, for me, watching the 3-4-3 and watching Matic in it, it just because there was more space for him to kind of thread balls. And I thought as soon as the season started, and in fact, as soon as Tuchel came in, I was just looking at Kovacic saying he's going to be able to get way more assists because in this kind of two, literally, it just opens it up because you've got the wing back making that run, you've got inside forward, et cetera, et cetera. And I feel like it just works. So whereas a lot of people are saying, oh, he's kind of developed it, I just think that if you was to switch back to a 4-3-3, I don't think you'll see as much. I think especially if we've got someone that can take the ball and dribble, you'll just see Kovacic giving the ball to the left winger more. And that's just my personal take on it. But one thing I also say is that whereas people talk about Inter Kovacic, I always think it's dangerous unless you watch Kovacic regularly at Inter to talk about Inter Kovacic, because I feel like it's the same with new Lukaku. Because you get these snippets and then people stretch out like that's their whole season. And I don't know. I can't say myself because I don't watch Inter Kovacic, but I always feel like it's dangerous when people talk about Inter Kovacic, Dortmund, Sancho, Lukaku. Do you know what I'm saying? Unless you've watched regularly.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. Okay. And then you've also got who else in midfield?
So it's a weird one. So like I've got Kante there, but
let's talk about next
I've
season. Focus on Kante. Let's focus on Kante. You've got Kante there. We're trying to win. This one I'll allow you. So we're just focused on this season first and foremost, but I will let you get your explanation off. But obviously, Kante and Kovacic, people say they're injury prone. Mm. To be fair, they have been injury prone. So I think people say, but it's the truth.
You know the ones we want to ask streets to say, but really, yeah, it's you know that's saying it.
It's not just the streets saying it, man. It's life. But yeah. So again, what would be your answer to relieving Kante and Kovacic or as like a backup for Kante and Kovacic when they're injured?
So initially for me, I wanted an understudy for me from last season, but I feel like the best choice would probably be having somebody that can play the majority of games,
yeah,
that can oversee it. And then when you need like that big game player, you bring Kante in. And for me, ideally it would be Jude, you know, but I do know that...
Okay, go on.
But I do know that Dortmund, they have that policy. They only like to sell one big player at a time in the season. But it's been reported that if they were to get a good enough offer, they would be tempted to sell. So that's kind of like where I've got to like start. Like if you get what I mean.
What did you make of Bellingham's England performance?
I don't think it was good at all. I feel like the second game was a lot better. I think the last game was probably his worst game.
Yeah.
I feel like the second game was a lot better.
And so with Bellingham, if we were to sign him, what would you expect him to bring to make us more title challenges?
Just an amazing ball-winning midfielder, you know, someone that's fearless in the tackle, you know, he can drive the team forward, you know, he's just really good. I feel like he can play in the multiple positions for us. He can play in the six, he can play in the eight. Mm. If you want a bit more advanced, he can play it as well and he can excel. You know, I just think he's just that engine that Kante also offers that
Would you play him as a single anchor?
Would I? I mean, I wouldn't be against it. I think he's got the intelligence to do it, but it wouldn't be like the position. I feel like I've seen a lot of people say like that's where they think he'll play in the future, but I don't think you get the best him if you play him there, if you get me. I just feel like he can play there. Do you get what I mean? Like, he can play there, but I think the best Bellingham you're going to get is as a centre mid.
Okay. All right. Okay, cool. And would you expect him, because I know that a lot of people, they expect goals from the midfielder. So would you see him as the guy to chip in with goals?
It's not really what I look to him for. I think he's got the ability to go and potentially get it, but it's not what I look to him for, you know, as a midfielder.
Anyway. One of the things you said, in fact, let me just double back to the defense quickly because I didn't address it. So you said Thiago Silva was a bit of an issue for you in the team, mm-hmm. but you've got him there and you've got him along with Fofana, but you'll be happy with that. You'll be happy with Thiago Silva and Fofana.
Yeah.
Okay. And then so midfield, you said it's not sturdy enough. It's not battle hardy enough. But you've brought in Tonali and Bellingham with Kovacic, and you're happy with that. Now it's got the.
Very much so, yeah.
Right. The venom. Okay. So let's get to your front three. Yes. We can start wherever you want.
Hey, listen, man. I'm happy with this. personally, out wide on the right, I'd go Dembele. You know, him and Tuchel, they've got an amazing relationship.
Okay.
You know, he's out of
Wait. Dembele, what if he wants 200k a week?
If he wants 200k a week?
Yeah.
It's a sticky one, man.
I've
said it already. The reason why for me it's sticky is that you have Reece and Mount who want new contracts as well. And
Would you say no if he said, I want 200k a week?
I'd say, okay, you know, if you want 200k a week, let's make it performance-based. So let's say if you play enough games, you'll get that.
No, and Dembele says, no, I'll go somewhere else. He says, I want 200k a week flat.
The thing is, Dan, yeah? When you talk to a man that's desperate, they'll say yes to anything. So at this point now, asking me, I don't know if it's a good...
I'm asking you now. 200k. For context, in the group chat, Babs was just chatting shit, to be fair. I know you're here, but I'm going to say it for your face. Babs was chatting shit. Babs was saying, oh, I'm not taking more than, was it? At first it was 160, then you said 160 to 180. I'm not paying more than 160 to 180. And I was like, are you crazy? He's on the free.
I get you. But my thing was just the fact that he's had these injury issues, one. And you've already got guys who want more money. But for me, I'm not against giving him 200k if he plays the games. That's what I said. I don't care if he plays the game. I don't mind. If this guy is in Chelsea or Smith's Hospital for 75% of the season, I'm going to be pissed if he's on
200k. Yeah, we're going to be pissed. It's a gamble. This is what I'm saying. It's a gamble. Listen, someone can get injured, like, even if they don't have injury issues, and then we can sign him and they can start getting injured. But so, like, all I'm saying is, would you take that gamble? 200k a week, Dembele. And to be fair,
you're desperate, Dan, man.
You're desperate. But to be fair, also, 200k a week is not that bad. And when you're saying, like, what would Reece want and what would Mount want? Do you know what people... Listen, Reece and Mount are now, they're senior players, essentially. They're not looked as youngsters. They're relied on. So them getting that type of money isn't an issue, like, when it comes down to it. So I don't even see that as an issue. It's a risk. Every single transfer you're making is a risk. For me, even if Dembele was to come in at 200k and he was injury prone, and I don't know how much they're offering him. We were just having this conversation in the group chat. But I don't think 200k is much to cry about when it comes down to it. And the good thing about Dembele, from what I've seen, is every single time he's been injured, and he's been injured a lot, he hasn't physically, he doesn't look like he's declined. So that I would be way more worried if these injuries were taking a toll on him. And yeah, again, we'll leave it to the medical team. But Dembele, I think he's one of the ones that everyone's unified on now. Everyone's happy with the signing. Everybody wants Dembele in. So please don't fuck up. Otherwise, Grimes are coming for you. So Dembele on the right. So who's going to be on the left for you?
Gnabry.
Now, we've had a back and forth about Gnabry. I said, because Babs knows the type of profile that I like. And so when I said, I don't want Gnabry, Babs was like, that's what you want. That's literally what you said you want. And listen, you're not wrong. Gnabry, that he's not someone that I'm going to complain about if we get him. Gnabry's, I feel like the type of finishes he does, he just looks like an expert finisher. I enjoy watching his finishes. You know, forget about the fact that he's good at finishing. And we haven't had one of those players for a long while, by the way. I used to really... like Gudjonsson's finishing Arsenal, like he'd score beautiful goals, but not just beautiful goals. When he was one on one, I could trust him one on one. And it's been a long time where I've had players where I feel like, okay, cool, they're gonna bury it, they're gonna kill off teams. And so, in that regard, I get why you said that I don't, well, it doesn't make sense that I don't want him. But for me, the reason why I'm less, it's not like if we get Gnabry, I think he'll do well for us. But the reason why I'm less kind of open to Gnabry is, I don't know. I feel like I always look for the hunger in players. And from what I'm seeing at Bayern Munich, he just doesn't seem like a hungry player anymore. It's not necessarily about his skill set. Some of it is, I feel like we need ingenuity. And I do believe that Gnabry, even at Chelsea, I believe he'll get chances and I believe he'll bury chances. And I believe that actually he'll be a good wide scorer for us. And I believe that we need that. But also what I want is people with the skill in tight situations to create space for themselves. And I think that whilst he kind of does it through running, I don't think he's got like those moments of skill as much. To just in a tight box, just, you know, I feel like he'll on the end of moves and all of that type of stuff, but I don't necessarily see him like taking it past two or three players in the middle of the box and then shooting. But listen, beggars can't be choosers. So if we get Gnabry, I think he'll do well here. But tell us why you want Gnabry.
Why I want Gnabry? Because I've seen people want Gabriel Jesus and I don't want him. I don't know if you remember that, but quite early on in the season, I actually said, you know what, I think this guy could be someone that we could get. And when I sat down, I thought to myself, okay, cool. He's a good player, yeah, but he's a player that people are saying they want to play a striker, but he literally said in the interview, he's preferring this position he's had playing out wide. So like, for me, okay, that's fair enough. I didn't play the right wing, but I've really got Dembele there in the right wing now, so I want someone that can play left wing. And I don't think that's really something that Jesus does. And I wouldn't really want him up front, personally, for me. And yeah, I don't know. I think he's a good player, but there's just something about it I just don't like. You know, like you know when you know this. Everybody has that player that you can look at them and be like, okay, they're good, but there's just something like I just don't like it. And I just feel like he's one of those players that he has big bust potential. Like he can just flop. Mm-hmm. I feel like when I look at him, I just feel like he has that kind of potential. Like, I don't know. Like, what's his hunger? You know, he's won the
Premier League. No, he's got hunger. And that's the reason.
He's won the Premier League. How many times has the City, you know, like,
no,
trust
me, he's got hunger. Like, he's got.
Well, you always say that you spoke to him, yeah?
No. Listen, I'm a good reader of body language. You know what I'm saying? Like, his eyebrows, like, you can see his eyebrows. He's not satisfied. Honestly, he's going to move, and I think he's going to stay in England. And I believe wherever he goes, he's going to be a hit. So it's not one of those ones where it's like, oh, we'll never find out. I'm putting my name to it now. I believe that he'll be a hit. And I think that it'll be one of those ones where everyone's like, oh, well, why didn't we go for them? He was right there. And everybody was like, yeah, I said it at the time or whatever. But I believe that he'll be a hit signing. The thing is with Gnabry as well, because he's such a good finisher, as long as he's in a team that he gets decent chances, I think he can do well.
Imagine him and Dembele, man.
I think
Dembele created a chance for Gnabry.
We're eating good, man. I think with Gnabry, he had the slow start to his career, obviously. But then at Bayern Munich, I can't remember who said it, a director at Bayern Munich, but he said Sané and Gnabry started the season on fire and then they fell off. And listen, I'm not a contemporary, I don't watch, so I don't want to. It will be good if anyone that watches Bayern regularly can tell me what happened in that part of the season. Because that's part of the reason why I'm thinking, what happened? Why isn't that Bayern Munich, they're not necessarily happy with him? It's not that just Gnabry wants to go. They weren't happy with him as well. So I'd want to know that. Whereas Man City fans, they're dying to keep Jesus. Pep, he's dying to keep Jesus. They just want to respect the fact that he wants to start regularly. So I feel like there's a little bit of a difference in that as well. And listen, you can't necessarily just go on that because clubs might want to keep players that are shit. And clubs, obviously, as a Chelsea fan, we know this. Clubs let go of players that, you know, they really shouldn't be letting go of. But I respect it, Gnabry. Okay, so we've got Gnabry on the left and we've got Dembele on the right. And so who's the main man?
Kai Havertz.
Kai Havertz. Mm-hmm. You're sticking with Kai Havertz.
I'm sticking him up top, man.
All right, talk me through it. So we've got Gnabry, who is a finisher. So we at least, you're not playing around because a lot of these people, they go on hope. They're like, oh yeah, maybe we can buy this player that never scores goals before, but when he comes down and Dembele will create for him, therefore he's going to score 50 goals. No, you've actually got someone that bangs in goals in Gnabry out wide, which we haven't had for ages. So well done on that. Because a lot of times we can fit, like even me, possibly now with the Gnabry thing, even me, I'm trying to talk my way out of what is just clearly obvious that we need goals away from the striker, and Gnabry is someone that will do that. So I applaud you for actually having Gnabry there. And then Dembele, you said we lack creativity. I think that's what you said at the top. And so is Dembele the answer for creativity? Because I don't really think in midfield there's an answer for creativity there, is there?
I think Dembele is a big part of it. Gnabry also offers it. You know, he's played wing back for Bayern and he's been able to like create for them. And obviously, I feel like if he's playing the front line, he'll be able to like continue like where he left off.
Mm-hmm.
Reece James as well at right back, he offers it. Trippier at left back, he offers it. I think Jude as well, something that he's done really well.
He's got ingenuity.
This season for Dortmund. Pardon?
He's got ingenuity.
Exactly. I just love how like, you know, with Pogba, one of the things that a lot of people loved when he was young was it was like a winger playing in midfield at times, if you get what I mean. And with Jude, you get those same qualities because he's played out wide for Birmingham and he's played out wide like in the first initial season with Dortmund. So you do get that 1v1 ability. So just that ability to beat a man either by skill or just through raw power. And I feel like that's something that you get. And you also get it from Kovacic now as well. So yes, it's good to see.
So, but you know what it is? Like, when I talk about ingenuity, I'm not necessarily about creating chances. I'm just saying sometimes a player might do something because if you do something that everybody expects you to do, then that's not ingenuity. But sometimes a player will get the ball and everybody will expect him to pass the guy on the left because that's where the play is going. But then he might just do some sort of skill and he just deceives everyone. And now the game, basically, he's just reset and everyone's like, fuck, the whole game's opened up. And it's not even like a pass or any creativity. He's just done something like that's ingenuity. Do you know what I'm saying? I feel like Bellingham does that. Like obviously Eden used to have moments like that for us. I look at our team, we don't necessarily have that many players that have that kind of ingenuity. And so Bellingham has that. I think Dembele might have a bit of that. I think he definitely has that. Dembele has it, even though Dembele, a lot of times is just he's just using his physical ability as well to kind of beat players. But he's definitely got ingenuity too, because you don't know whether he's doing it. He's left, he's right. So it kind of
left is right. Yeah, you know, right. He's telling his views. I know what I'm struggling with. You know.
Yeah. So then why Kai up top?
Right. So for me, right. I look at what he's done up top already and I've been impressed, you know. In the Prem, 17 games, 1,200 minutes. That's roughly, what, 13 appearances. He scored 7 goals up front in the Prem. So that's 1 in 2 already. Mm-hmm. Champions League again, 555 minutes, 3 goals and 7 appearances. That's 1 in 2 again. So he's already shown me that he's got a 1 in 2 potential playing up top with not the best of creators, you know. Mm-hmm. And for me, if he's able to like carry on that form or even potentially increase it with like the input that you have mm-hmm. from those other two forwards, I think it would just be a smash hit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really, really think it would be a smash hit. And for me, that's where I've always wanted to see him play up top. You know, the midfielders we've got there already, I feel like they're a lot more adept to playing in midfield and doing the midfield work than he would be if he was to be playing there. And I just feel like playing him up top with those two guys there surrounding him, I just think the goals are going to come. Like, we've already seen it. He's already been 1 and 2 up top already. So if he continues that rate into the new season, playing 40-odd games, you know, and even increase it even slightly, you're looking at a very top striker there, you know. So
you like 1 and 2 numbers, because I've always been against 1 and 2. But you like 1 and 2 numbers.
I'm not saying I like ones. My thing is, right, I'm not in the business of saying, okay, he's done this, so he's going to suddenly go to 3 and 4, mm-hmm. 2 and 3. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that as long as he maintains this, it's good. I mean, if he can get even better, it's even better. Okay, like, so then I'll be even more happy.
What would you expect from Gnabry? Goals to starts.
Oof, that's a good question, you know. So how many starts are we saying?
All right, so let's say Gnabry gets 30 starts, Kai gets 30 starts, and Dembele gets 30 starts.
Gnabry.
How much would you expect roughly from Gnabry, non-pen?
15 to 20, because Gnabry doesn't even take penis anyway. 15 to 20.
I'm thinking of
Bayern, like, he doesn't start 30 plus. I don't think he's ever started 30 plus games.
Yeah, but okay.
And he's always done well in terms of
his goal scoring. If he starts 30 games, then we'll say 17, because that's in the middle, 15 to 20. For Gnabry.
Mm-hmm.
Kai Havertz starts
30 games. I'd say 17 goals again.
17, okay. So two players pushing 20 and non-pens, that's good. Dembele starts 30 games, which I laughed a little bit, but Dembele. We love you, Dembele.
Has he ever done that?
We love you, Dembele. But I love
him. I don't think he's ever... Has he even started more than 20 games for Barca?
Probably at Rennes. Not at Barca, but probably at Rennes and probably maybe at Dortmund. But Dembele, we're in your camp. We like you. But if he was... if he was to start 30 games... If he was to start 30 games... Let's get serious. Yeah. Okay.
Let's get serious.
Yeah, if he was to start
30
games, how many goals?
You know, the thing with that really interests me is, right, at Rennes, he was more of a goal threat.
Yes.
He was a lot more of a goal threat. And that's one of the things that really excited me when I saw him and I saw Bogart on loan out there. I was looking at him, I was thinking, okay, this guy can score, you know, and he had the creativity side of him. Mm-hmm. At Dortmund, it kind of like flipped.
Mm-hmm.
And he was scoring decently, but it was the creation that was really exciting people.
We know why it flipped at Dortmund, because I didn't understand that either.
Because he was playing touchline, he was playing kind of like a wing back at times.
It's too cool. It's too cool. Like, and this is what I say when people talk about Hudson-Odoi only 4 goals and stuff like that. Like, when it comes down to it, it depends on the role you're playing, really and truly.
Exactly. I feel like people forget, right? Two players can play right wing and they're not playing the same role.
Right. And it really
they're not playing the same role at all.
Listen, I put my hands up too, because I looked at Pulisic stats and I was like, what? 4 goals? But really and truly, I remember when Batshuayi went on loan there and Pulisic was literally wide, just slipping the ball into the middle. And that's a feature of Tuchel's games. Like, I want players out wide, just slipping the ball into the middle. Now, obviously, that's one of the reasons why we can see he likes the swing back system. I know a lot of people want him to move to 4-3-3, but really and truly, even at PSG, and people talk about, oh, he played four at the back. Marquinhos was a centre-back in midfield. Do you know what I'm saying? So that's still three centre-backs on the field. So I think he likes a lot of the system. And I judge Pulisic without, and this is why stats are so dangerous, because it doesn't tell you the full story. I judge Pulisic thinking, why are you not really scoring that many goals? But now, and with Dembele as well, it's like, rah, like, because I remember at the time we were talking about Dembele versus Mbappe. And I was like, when it comes down to the best attackers in the world, they're not getting loads of assists. The best of people like the Messis, the Ronaldos, the people that people love, they're scoring lots of goals. So I was thinking,
and even then Mbappe, man, like, I think he's led Europe in assists.
It's
so scary.
Comparing Mbappe.
Yeah, I get what you mean. I
was saying that Mbappe is going to be better because when it comes down to it, people love the goal scorer most, not their sister. But then again, like, I did see clips and I saw him slipping the ball in wide, but it makes so much sense, especially in a Tuchel system, why Dembele flipped to being more of a creator. Now, at Barcelona, he had actually some seasons where he scored a decent amount of goals, right?
Yeah, I think he got 6-1 season.
Is that the most he's done?
That's off head. I can check now.
But yeah.
But I don't think I was wrong. He done 8. He got 8 goals. He was 1-2 for one season.
1-2. How many starts?
20 starts.
Okay, so that's good. This is what I'm saying. So he's had a good return. 8 goals from a winger, especially a young one, in 20 starts. That's really good. So he's got goal potential. We just need to understand how Tuchel's going to use him. But if in this system, because you've got 4-3-3, so you've got Reece James because when it comes down to it, in a 3-4-3, it might be that Tuchel decides, Reece James, you get in the box, you're the shooter. Then Billy, you stay wide to create. Do you know what I'm saying? In that 3-4-3.
I'm just speaking, man. It's bringing a tear to my eye, man. It's bringing a tear to my eye.
But in the way you've painted it and the way you've set up, how many goals are you taking for Dembele in 30 starts?
It's a tough one because I've already said he's done that 1-2 for Ren already. Mm-hmm. And he's had seasons of 1-2 or 1-3 for Barca.
Mm-hmm.
So it's tough, man. I think you'll get at least 8 goals for sure, but it's whether or not it's about how we. So okay, I'm gonna say 10 goals. I'm gonna say 10 goals.
1-3, which is decent. But
yeah,
that so. Go on.
Yeah, and the thing with Dembele is this guy, he's just such an unknown quantity at times. Like, even though you've seen his qualities, like, I still feel that there's so much more that he has to bring to the table.
Yeah, he's still 24, 25. So he's still got a lot to give. But if we do the numbers, and those are
44 goals.
So it's 44 goals, which is good. Really, truly, the top attack should be getting around 45. That's at the lowest, but going to around about. And don't forget, that's non-penalty goals. So when you add penalties, if they're taking the penalties, that should bump up too.
I've checked already. Don't worry. I already compared it to Liverpool's, and I think Liverpool's was 49 goals, non-pen. So
yeah, but Liverpool like hit that season in season out. Do you know what I'm saying? Like easy. But just quickly. Jorginho is not going to be a main starter in your team, which does kind of open up the role for penalty taker. So who would you have as a penalty taker in that team?
I don't know. I don't really care, man. Whoever wants to take him, man. If Reece wants to take them. But okay. I mean, it will probably end up being Kai, because he's the only one I can think that's actually taking.
Kai's been a penalty taker. He's been a penalty taker for
Leverkusen. Yeah. So I guess it will probably end up being him, but
okay.
That's not why I dropped Jorginho.
No, I know. But it's a good team. I'm trying to let me see what I can fault you on from my perspective anyway. I think the front three, the only thing that I might be able to fault you on here is it looks like to me that Gnabry might be the lead goal scorer here, which isn't necessarily a bad thing because we've seen with Salah at Liverpool. And I think Gnabry is that good that he could get those type of numbers if he was focused and on it and hungry. I just don't think he's as hungry as a Salah. The midfield, it's interesting. The midfield, I haven't seen enough of Tonali. I've known about him from when he was it Brescia or whatever?
Brescia, yeah.
But I've just not watched him. I haven't watched enough about Adrian Trafford. I think Babs is just too deep into continental football. I can't even criticise because I haven't seen enough of half of these players.
Hey, listen, man. Chelsea stressed me out so much. I just stopped watching. I had to stop watching. Start watching other teams, man, to get my enjoyment.
What I'll say is this is me bringing in my kind of philosophy. I do like the idea of having two strikers on the pitch, two people that you can rely on for goals. I still think Havertz. I agree with you. I think Havertz, Dembele, and Gnabry, I think they're all pretty similar. Maybe Gnabry is the best of them, but I feel like all of them at their best, maybe one in two. Apart from Gnabry, I can see maybe Gnabry scoring more of them. I think Havertz as well, great header of the ball. And obviously, we've got people that can cross here.
Dembele, Reece, yeah.
But I just feel like Havertz, in the Premier League specifically, where people sit back a lot, I don't think he's been as good a goal scorer with his feet. Like, I like the headers, obviously. But in terms of the shooting, you know, I keep on saying this over and over again. And when we talk about Salah, who's hungry just to, like, just... I don't want to be... Like, Salah doesn't care about build-up play or whatever and coming deep. He just wants to be in the box and shoot and score. And so maybe Gnabry can be that player for us. But I'll be worried about, do we have someone that can be a golden boot chaser that can compete with a Salah, that can compete with a Kane? So that would be one red flag for me. It's difficult for me, again, like I said, Adrian Trafford, I don't know about him.
For me, with him, he's more of like a... He is the backup to Chilwell, but
okay,
he's
going to
be
Chilwell,
the starter because
you don't want to talk about
from ACL. I'm not trying to rush him back now.
Yeah. And Chilwell's good, but I still think Chilwell isn't. I know people kind of really put him sick, but I like Chilwell. I think in general he's got good striking technique. He's got good ball control. So
he's like a hungry player as well.
Yeah. He's got the hunger. But I think to be fair, you put together a good team. It was a bit easier to knock down Joe's team. I think you put together a team that actually might stand the test of time with a lot of them, which is good. Okay, any final comments from you, Babs?
I guess we could probably talk a bit about, you know, the Chelsea need to act faster brigade on Twitter, you know.
Okay.
You know, this has been the part two of we need X, Y, and Z part from last season, you know. Mm. And it seems to be the same people, so... I just want to get your thoughts on that and why you think people are so desperate for signings to be just being done overnight throughout the thing. Because I look at it like Arsenal, you know, just a couple of days ago, they were complaining about, you know, Arsenal doesn't seem like we get signings done when nobody knows. And just today, you know, they just got a signing through the window and now they're excited again. So,
yeah,
I don't understand why Chelsea fans are so worried.
Because fans just want something to be excited about. And I get it. But for me, maybe because I'm a bit older, I don't know what... I don't even think I was like this when I was younger, to be fair. But I don't know. I just... The delayed gratification is that we're talking about. I think sometimes people just want things now. Do you know what I'm saying? And that I just look at it myself and I don't go back and think, oh, if only we signed this player earlier.
You know, this reminds me of Dan, yeah? Wow. I feel like a lot of guys on Chelsea Twitter, you know, they're moving a bit like a consumer. Like, for the guys who know, they want that quick signing straight to the point. You know, that's what they're just there for the kill, man.
Yeah. And to be fair, it's like what you said with the Arsenal fans and Man United, the fans complaining. I think fans just like to complain as well. They're desperate. Like, Chelsea fans are desperate for success. Like you said it earlier, third and fourth. You're tired of finishing third and fourth. And basically, they just want to see the changes that are made. And obviously, the earlier they come, the more settled that they are. And I think it's just the nervousness of, are we going to improve as a team or are we going to end up with another dead, you know, basically another time we'll be going to the season thinking, actually, we can't win because the squad isn't good enough. So I get all of those concerns and people saying, oh, you're a part of the problem because you're saying that Chelsea aren't acting fast enough. Look, until the window's closed, it's difficult for me to judge Chelsea because I'd rather get the better player on the last day of the window rather than the worst player earlier.
Ooh, I don't know about that, Dan, this season.
What do you mean?
I don't know about that.
What do you mean?
Because the season starts a lot earlier this season. It starts a lot earlier. And I don't know if you want to wait.
I don't care. Well, I would rather have a good player than a bad player. Lukaku took us backwards. Do you know what I'm saying? So I would rather have the better player on the last day of the window. Not necessarily saying that you have to get better players on the last day of the window, but this is me saying that I don't care about the quickness of it. And I know, obviously, the better, if we get a player before the season starts, it's good, but it's just, that's like fairy tale. I'm not saying that it's impossible to get the player before the season, but we know that actually we have to negotiate with another party. And sometimes,
yeah, for sure. So, other people. So Dan, I'm gonna play devil's advocate here. So, what do you say to the fans that say, "Oh, but you know, we've had all this time, you know, throughout the end of the season and the beginning of the transfer window to, you know, find players and negotiate." So, what do you say to those fans?
Number one, I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Maybe you do, and you've got your ITKs, etc. But obviously, we have, even with the sanctions. Like, I was, when people were saying, "Oh, we've got sanctions, we can't do any movements," I was like, this is Chelsea. Do you know what I'm saying? We can't just stop as a club. They're going to have to start doing some movements. But there's only so much you can do. There's only so far you can go. With Rudiger, I know Rudiger's refuted this himself, but Tuchel was saying that we're going to probably be late in some transfers and we're going to lose out on some players because we can't actually do anything with these sanctions. So even though you can start making movement, put things in place, when it comes down to it, there's going to be a wall that you're going to hit. But I think even beyond all of that, if you don't know what's going on, it's difficult. So like with this kind of Koundé thing where it came out, I got an injury. Now, I don't think it's slowed it down, the transfer, at all. But like maybe there's something that's coming up. This player's injured, or maybe the selling club has changed the transfer fee. There's a number of things that can be coming up, and these people are like, "Why don't you get this done? Why don't you get this done?" It's like, just chill. When it comes down to it, at the end of the season, they've got this whole time to buy the players. So at the end of the transfer window, that is when I look at the work done, saying, "Okay, cool, let me judge it." But before then, it's just difficult because, like you said, one minute Arsenal fans are complaining, next minute, "Oh yeah, excitement. And I get people are just emotional and people want to complain about some things. So I personally think it's just people being a little bit spoiled, a little bit emotional.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there, man. I do get some of their concerns. You know, I do get some of their concerns, but
yeah, you're going to be concerned.
I feel like what I think we spoke about in the group chat. I feel fans do this themselves. You know, they hold on to every single last piece of news that they just work themselves up.
They want to find out.
I guess the heat is not helping either. You know, because the heads are getting hot.
But this is what I'm saying. Boy. They want to go to the ITKs to find out who we're linked with early.
Early.
Yeah, now you find out earlier. Obviously, you're gonna have to wait until it's been done.
You've got the perfect analogy, Dan.
Yeah.
The perfect, you know, when you were a kid, yeah, and it was coming around to Christmas. And you started looking around the house for the present, you know, and you found it early. You know, you found the present December 1st. I didn't think now I've got to wait.
Yeah.
Just be patient, man. Be patient, man. Enjoy the ride.
And no one's saying patience means that you're going to get, that they're going to do good work, but it makes more sense to judge because, to be fair, it might be a better analogy to say that this kid is looking around for the presents, but they can't find the presents. So they're assuming that the present hasn't been bought.
There's nothing, yes.
Right. I feel like, but it's like, then Christmas Day comes out, oh, the present's there all along. Do you know what I'm saying? So I feel like with Chelsea fans, I think, to be fair, I'm going to be prude and just say a lot of you need to be a bit more mature. Like, you're a bit old.
I definitely agree, man.
You're a bit old for this shit, you know? for real. But, but then we all like to complain. It's part of the job as a fan. We all like to complain. But for me,
I'll be bored about it.
Yeah. But for me, I'm waiting to see what they do. And again, it's a bit more real. Like, this is real life. So it's not just, oh, Chelsea put down money and therefore the player comes. Because when it comes down to it, there is a budget, right? And Babs, if you've got something that you know I want, right? You're going to try and get as much money
as possible
from me as possible, right? And so if I'm saying, okay, Babs, I'll give you £50 for this, but you know, actually, we can continue negotiating.
Like, if you offer it to me in the first way, without me even offering that, I'm thinking, why do you want this so much?
Right. Everybody knows, and they can see from the fans, they're desperate for it. The fans are desperate for this signing. So you're not helping by being so desperate as well, because the Sevilla fans is like, yeah, they better get them, otherwise the fans are going to be crazy, right? And so when it comes down to it, Sevilla are thinking, okay, cool. They want to buy him for 50 million. We want 70. So essentially what you're saying, for Chelsea to get that done straight away, Chelsea would need to pay the 70 million. But we've got a budget, right? So now you're saying, oh, but we need to do all this other work. Well, if you was in charge and if you was to get this done early, then we'd have less money, right? So I just feel like, but then again, that's right now because there's no ticking time clock. Towards the end of the window, Sevilla know that actually we need to get this deal done. Because if we don't get this deal done, then Koundé's still going to be here. He's going to be unhappy to be here for another season. And so now Sevilla have to be a bit more open. Like, okay, cool. We did say 70, but actually we'll be happy to do 55, right? So that's the dynamics. And that's why you always see deals. Everyone's like, why did they wait till last minute? Well, it's easy to get things done because there's more kind of ambition from all parties to get the deal done before the deadline crosses. Whereas way before then, people are going to be kind of like, you know, the back and forth of negotiations. So all I'm saying, for me personally, I don't know what's going on. So I don't overreact. You want to get emotional, overreact, that's you. Obviously, you like that emotion, that emotional roller coaster. A lot of people say they can't stand the transfer window. I'm fine with it. But I think one of the reasons why I think I'm fine with it is because I don't get upset like other people do when I don't hear that Chelsea have signed a player after 10 days. I'm copacetic. And I guess that's the difference.
Yeah, same. I don't know. For me, the reason I don't like it is because of the reason I don't like it is the fans, if anything, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I get. But then I don't let them stress me. But to be fair, what will stress me is if we sign a shit player. So like for me, part of it is not signing players because some of the players we sign, I'm like, ah, that's someone we're going to have to loan to Inter Milan for 3 years. that's another person we're going to have to loan next season. But yeah, any other questions you want to go before we close?
I guess Chelsea aside, what are you looking forward to this season? You know, Chelsea aside.
I'm looking forward to Newcastle and what they're going to be doing. I like the fact that a lot of people try to have this stage plan for Newcastle. First, just compete with
Everton. They have to do this in then, this time period.
Then next season, compete with Everton. And then maybe when we've got some time or when we've got some time to win some cups, then maybe you can start acting like Man City.
Yeah. Football doesn't work like that, man.
It doesn't work like that and they shouldn't work like that. And I'm glad that they're not. And to be fair, some of the players have been linked to them like, that's a bit like that kind of phase, kind of plan thing. But they've been aggressive. I like Ekitike. And it seems like they might be getting through. He's someone that I would have bought for Chelsea.
Apparently he actually doesn't want to go.
So I've heard
that's the alleged thing.
Yeah, so I've heard a little bit back and forth. Apparently that agent agreed without him. And so there's a little bit, apparently he wants to go to Dortmund. But if he was to come in again, Ekitike and Alan Maximan and they're linked with Paqueta too, and they've got Bruno Guimaraes and they're linked with Lodi. And so I like what I'm hearing about Newcastle. I like competition. Do you know what I'm saying? I'm hearing Perez come out talking about, oh, we need La Liga to be better. And like, they'll be dying for like the competition that we have in the Premier League next season.
They die for it, man.
With a manager like Conte, who's not here to participate. Tuchel's not here to participate. Klopp, again, he lost out last day, so he's going to be hungry. Pep, who, listen, like, Klopp has
kept him sharp. Man.
Klopp has kept him sharp.
That Pep guy is evil, man. Like,
he's evil.
Fam, this guy's only not won the league twice in his whole career.
But I love, like, I think he's like me in terms of the way he kind of, a lot of the time when I compliment people, don't take it as a compliment sometimes. I'm throwing shade. I'm throwing shade with a smiley face. And Pep stole that from me because I was like one of the first with that kind of style. But so
I'm so happy. What do you believe?
So the competition for the league is very interesting. With Manchester United, again, it's an interesting project. New manager, going to completely change the style, going to bring in maybe Antony as well. And so it'll be good to see Antony and maybe Sancho either wing to see what it does. Linked with Ziyech as well, by the way. So if you want to take him, be my
really?
They Yeah, just one link. I've just seen one. So it's not just one link.
They're going to be excited, that man, Dan.
But the Man United project is interesting to see what ETH, because I feel like this one,
he's a very unknown entity, so
he's a very unknown entity, so that'll be interesting too. But then also, I just feel like the Premier League, you don't just have to look at the top of the table anymore, even the middle part of the table, Crystal Palace, Wolves. I enjoy watching so many different teams in the Premier League, and I feel like with there's so much money as well, it's not just the top of the table teams that are going to be bringing in interesting players, It's also going to be the.
We've already seen Aston Villa bringing them Kamara, who a lot of them top teams will need to.
I haven't seen Kamara, but when I looked at the YouTube, I wasn't impressed.
I was not having it, man. I saw a lot of people wanting him, but not for me. But I did see a lot of top teams were.
What about
a lot of top teams were linked?
What about?
I don't want this guy, man. Keep him away from my club.
For me, I don't like to go either way. So when I don't know a player, I don't like to write them off, but I don't like the hype either. Now,
that's my bad. I don't like the hype, man. Right. You know the funniest thing is, Daniel? When I first saw him, right, I think it was like 2 years ago, I was liking him. But do you know who else I saw at the same time?
Who?
Do you know who else I saw? Timo Werner. That's who else I saw. You know,
was you liking Werner back then?
The thing I liked about Werner was just the goal for it, man.
Be honest.
I just like the goal for it. I just like the goal for it. That was actually it. For me,
Werner,
the goals.
Werner, so Dr. What do you call Dr. Leroy again? You've got a name.
Dr. Locomotion.
Dr. Locomotion. So at the time, I was saying Haaland. And then he was like, oh yeah, but look at Werner as well. He's scoring similar. I was like, no, Haaland. And he was like, Werner. The thing is, I've seen things. Werner's been around for a long time. And I've just always not been impressed by Werner.
Yeah.
I've just always
that one season where it was above what you normally
do. No, I'm not even just talking about goals. I always look at the overall player, and I remember seeing him for Germany thinking, I don't like this player. And then the goals obviously started to come, and then I was impressed by Haaland. The Locomotion was saying Werner too. He obviously likes to keep this kind of on the hush, but with the Werner thing, yeah, this is what I'm saying, goals are such a catfish. And with Nkunku...
Bigly, massively. I don't think Nkunku's even that... I think he's a decent player, but...
But yeah, so this one...
I just don't want him, man.
With Nkunku, it's not like... I remember, I thought Werner was an eyesore when I saw him. But he was playing the wing and he was a striker. But at the time when I saw him, he was playing the wing and I thought he was an eyesore. With Nkunku, he doesn't look like an eyesore. But at the same time, this is what I say for attackers. It should be where it's like, okay, cool. If this player isn't going to score goals... Because at Chelsea, we've seen it enough. These players that score goals... And then come to Chelsea, they don't score goals. So I always ask myself, if this, for whatever reason, he goes through a Torres, Werner, Morata type of thing, where he's not scoring goals, am I not just, are you comfortable in the ball, but are you going to be like still a dangerous player just in your general play? And with Nkunku, I know people say assisting. I just don't think he's that good a player away from goals. Like I'm not saying he's bad. I just don't think, because Bernard thought actually you're a bad player. I don't think he was bad away from goals. I just don't think he's good enough away from the goals. And he's not someone like that's a real kind of striker profile too. So I can see him maybe.
I don't know what he is, man. I don't know what the hell he is.
He reminds me of, I remember when we signed Malouda and I was really underwhelmed by Malouda. And people like Malouda, Chelsea fans like Malouda.
I liked it only because of. He was like a family, like one of a family friend knew him, innit?
Really?
I always had to back it like that.
But the thing is with Malouda, and the same thing with Nkunku, is Malouda, I never really read, because don't forget, we came off the back of having Robben. So it was so high, and then we went down to...
Yeah, the expectations are high,
man. We're losing recipes. So with Nkunku, I just feel like, I always like the idea of, when we buy these players, really and truly, I'm not going to be jealous about any other attackers in Europe. Like when you get like Liverpool fans had Mane and Salah for ages, and there's other good players out there, but they're not jealous because they're not pressed because these guys,
because the rice at home is premium,
cup.
Man,
they fill their cup, you know what I'm saying? And I just feel like some of the signings we make, like Werner, Ziyech, Lukaku, like you're inevitably going to start looking around, do you know what I'm saying? You're going to cheat. You're going to start looking at... You're going to do what Babs does and start watching other teams all the time, because at home, they're not doing enough. There's not enough talent there. And so I just feel like Nkunku will be more of that personally.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah.
He's one of those players that I let him sign for someone else and I'll see if he's good there. I don't want it to be here.
I do like your finishing. I can't lie.
Yeah, his finishing looks good. His finishing looks good. I have to give him that.
Yeah. So, but anyway, I think that's enough for him to go eat. Babs, it's been a good
one. My man's coming on soon, man. So, boy, I need to go get him. Just go warm up.
Babs, this is what I'm saying. When I said 7 o'clock, you knew why. I was like, not nine. I need to go warm up. It's a good one. All right, man. Peace.
Yeah, man. All right, peace.
He done it! The greatest night in the history of Chelsea Football Club!
Hazard. Trying to find a way through. Oh, that is magnificent. Magical from Eden Hazard.
They just
bring it up by Eden. Oh, that is absolutely phenomenal.
That's more like Kante. They do threads on Twitter and ranting. Doing the most. True say that money is power. So when you get money, keep quiet and ghost. Ghost. I remember when I shot my shot, but I didn't have guap, so I hit the post. But next time it's a golden goal. And it...
Sports Social Podcast Network.